Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 82, Angela Shaw on Building Connections and Relationships. Here's a shout out to listeners in Lexington, Kentucky, and in Georgia, in the cities of Bonaire, Canton, Columbus, Dawsonville, Flowery Branch, and Gainesville. Unlabeled Leadership is a volunteer service that has reached listeners in 56 countries, 42 of the United States, and at last count, 474 cities or territories. When the show started in January, we may have reached four countries. 81 episodes later, the list has grown quite a bit. With that, let's get started. In Austin, Texas, Angela Shaw is the Chief People Officer at Juiceland, and in her LinkedIn profile, she writes, "I dream big, go hard on my goals, create bodies of work, network without a purpose, and am impatient in getting to where I am meant to go." She describes herself as a people advocate, leader, steward, speaker, introvert, diversity inclusionist, and teacher, and I would add that she is empathetic, caring, and kind. Part 1, Viewpoint Limitations. In my leadership books, I write about seven principles, and one of those principles is connect with others. To be effective at connecting with others, you need to be able to share about yourself and get to know other people, and that means learning different perspectives, different viewpoints, and listen with an open mind. In this story, Angela shares how someone helped her open her mind and consider other viewpoints. Here's Angela to explain.
Earlier in my career, I was having trouble with a coworker. I thought that the coworker was getting to have behavior that everybody didn't get to have, and that the behavior was negatively affecting the whole team. I also felt like that there was no repercussion to this bad behavior, and it was being discussed openly among the team, so everybody knew about it. So I went to our supervisor, who was the director of human resources, to talk about it, and he basically blew it off. Like, it doesn't matter what's going on. And it made me so angry that he didn't want to address it. The situation became too much to the point that we had to call in a mediator, because I just didn't understand why someone would be allowed to have behavior that negatively affected the team. And when I spoke to the mediator, what she said to me after hearing me complain and whine and get on a pedestal and talk about this situation was, "Your righteous indignation is not allowing you to see any other viewpoint but your own."
Oh, wow.
And she went on to explain that while that is a great emotion to have, righteous indignation, you can't lead your actions with that. It was such a pivotal point for me.
It must have been like a brick. Just bam.
Yeah, it didn't feel good at first, but once I started to really think about that, and I have gone back to that often throughout the rest of my career, it really affected my definition of leadership, what I felt like my leader at the time, the reaction they had, what I wanted to be going forward when the time came for me to have a team or to lead people. What it really introduced me to is granting grace, being able to meet people where they are, being able to hold people accountable for their behavior without alienating them in the process. That righteous indignation would take over and it would affect how I interacted. I can't alienate the other person in the interaction. I was judging this person based on my definition of right or wrong. It did affect me in an adverse way. I didn't consider that person. I didn't consider their feelings. I didn't consider what they may have been going through that would even cause the actions that they were taking. I still, like I said, think about that today. It still affects me. It still helps me monitor my righteous indignation. That's still there. It doesn't go away. But I do think even if you have emotions that could have negative effect, it's how you go about using them differently that can really take you to the next level.
Tell me a little bit more about granting grace and what you mean by that.
So I think in interactions, individuals center all interactions on themselves. I was definitely guilty of that in that situation. And I think it comes out in people all the time. But if you constantly think about granting the other person grace, you're not centering the interaction on yourself, but you're centering it on them. And that creates a different dynamic when you have a conversation that's challenging or uncomfortable or redirecting maybe somebody's behavior. It really changes the dynamic of that interaction if you center it on them. So granting them grace for it if they're having a bad day. They have an illness you don't know about that makes them late to work. Whatever it could be, just granting them grace in that interaction to say, I really want to understand what's going on and I want to know how I can help you.
When something happens by a different person and we see the behavior, whatever it was, you know, it could be driving down the road and someone cuts you off. We quickly react with a story about why that person did whatever that person did and then get upset, not because of what the person did, but what we think why the person did what they did. But it sounds like when granting grace, it's almost as if you're taking a pause and not just assuming that you know what's going on with this person and just giving that person the opportunity to just that, have a bad day. There could be something else going on, something I don't see. When you do that, it opens up a lot of possibilities.
It does, because it humanizes the person on the other end of the interaction.
Until you find out your perception was right and they did something intentional. But still, even in that situation, there's always something behind that and something that drives that. I love that quotation. Now I have something new to think about. Righteous indignation.
Yeah, because I think that's a measure that I use for myself, but that I also put on other people. And sometimes it can be too much to put that on other people.
Tell me a little bit more about that, because I'm not sure if I understand.
Yeah. So if I have a definition of right or wrong behavior in the workplace, I put that measure on myself. So I measure myself by that. Like I'm always 5 minutes early, you know, control situations so that something that I do doesn't negatively affect somebody else and what they have to do. I turn in assignments on time. I communicate properly. I measure myself by my definition, but I also will put those measurements on other people. So if they fall below where I set the measurement, I'm indignant that they fell below my measurement.
And that makes sense. I will never go to a meeting with you and not be 5 minutes early from now on.
And it's not to say that I don't have a bad day. I do, you know.
It's true. Stuff happens.
It does.
Part two, caring concern. Another part of leadership is putting others first. There are several ways to do that, but one way in particular is valuing what other people think and how they view things and what their experiences are like. In this story, Angela talks about how someone came to her and wanted to learn more about her perspective. Angela also describes how it affected her and her relationship with this person. Here's Angela to explain.
Encountering people in the workplace who are different than you can sometimes be fearful. I really love when you can learn from other people, whether it's up or down the chain of command, the opportunity to interact with somebody and want to learn from them. So ways in which you can just be a better person or make better decisions. I had a leader once who wanted to learn more about my journey as a Black woman, because I openly acknowledge that there's disparity. I openly acknowledge that the playing field is not always level and that paths are different. And so I really tried to talk about that in the workplace, not just for myself, but for other people who may feel marginalized or underserved in their workplaces. And in this specific situation, which it was a situation that happened often between the two of us, she always wanted to listen and she didn't judge. And she gave value to my story being different than hers. She believed it and she wanted to collaborate with me differently. So in ways that made me feel safe and wanted and respected, it has stayed with me. Leaders who respond in that way, or people who want to take in information or stories that are different than they are, it allows them to be able to respectfully respond to situations like Black Lives Matter, Stop Asian Hate, or celebrating Pride Month. So the way in which we accept other people who are different than us and we aren't frozen by fear of difference.
I would add to that, it shows that when this particular person was interacting with you, wanting to learn from you, and as you said, collaborated with you a little differently, it shows that that person values you and what you bring to the company.
Absolutely. That is absolutely how it made me feel, which in turn affects my behavior, my output, you know, the things that I want to do to help the organization be successful. It absolutely affected that in positive ways too.
Recently, I had a podcast with Dave Best where he was in a situation where his wife was really sick and in the hospital, a serious problem. And his boss showed up and said, I talked with our VP. I talked with some other people. I want you to have 3 months where you're still paid, but you spend time with your family. You do what you need to do because you need the income, but at the same time, you would be better served with them than with us. His response, of course, was gratitude, overwhelmed. When he came back, he was so determined to show how much he appreciated that he really put himself out there. It affected his output and what he did.
And it definitely does. I'm a testament to that. That care and concern that you give employees and humanizing them, 9 times out of 10, that is going to be the result of it.
Since you mentioned Black Lives Matter and a lot of the stuff that's going on in the world today, and I'm thinking back on May 26th with George Floyd and the story, it's just affected everyone around the world. It was the video that opened the eyes to people who didn't know what was going on. When something like this happens to someone in your organization, and not necessarily Black Lives Matter, it could be gender, it could be sexual orientation, it could be anything. And that person shows up for work the next day that something huge happened in the news. What advice would you give to coworkers when face-to-face with that person and is able to say something? What would you advise?
So I think that it depends on the relationship that they have with that specific person and how they would approach it with that specific person. So if this is someone that you have a relationship with, that you talk to on a regular basis, you have a good peer-to-peer or coworker relationship, you should definitely approach the subject. How are you feeling today? Do you want to talk about it? Is there anything that I can do? And letting the person make that decision. Now, if it's someone that you don't have this closer relationship with and you're not really sure how they're going to take it, I would still say that there should be some kind of reach out. So if it is in you that you want to make this connection, I think that it is okay to make that connection. What I think that people grapple with is they're concerned about the reaction that they're going to receive, and they let that stop them from reaching out. And I think that that should not stop you from reaching out. I think in any situation where the other person feels disrespected or you hurt their feelings or they have some kind of reaction to how you reached out to them, you would apologize. So if it had nothing to do with a factor or underrepresented or marginalized or social justice, you would apologize. It is the same. So it's the interaction, it's broaching the subject, it's the reach out that holds more value than being concerned about what the reaction is going to be.
At a very minimum, just acknowledging what happened and saying to the person, we don't have to talk about this, but I just want you to know I'm available if you want someone to listen.
It's that simple.
Part 3, connecting through similarities. In episode 4, Judy Hale and the Brown Suit, Judy describes the lack of diversity that her father experienced when working with different companies. In the 21st century, companies have discovered how crucial and strategic diversity is. While diversity is important, Angela encourages us to consider some other things. Here's Angela to explain.
Would love to see people connect over their similarities more. We concentrate a lot on how we're different from one another, and I think that is what causes quite a bit of just contention in the world. So my advice would be around how people get to know one another and communicate and collaborate. I would dare everybody to talk to at least one person a week who has an underserved factor or is in a marginalized group or is just different than them. The ability to pay attention to other people and learn about them, the ability to center other people's experiences, the ability to acknowledge disparity and commit to a personal journey of learning more is what will make us a better connected, more well-rounded, inclusive world. So I think that would put us on a journey where we will see the real work that we want to see towards diversity, equity, and inclusion, or justice, or equity, or all the words that people use. Our ability to get past being performative, to get past just having a brand logo color change, get past getting stuck in the weeds of fear, and to really exist in places that are safe in real time.
There's a traditional leadership assumption that people sometimes fall prey to it's just bad. And that is that you can't develop intimacy, meaning it just as simple as friendship and familiarity with other people, because if you're friends with people that report to you, that's going to affect how you work with that person if problems come up. And it's a terrible idea. You cannot compartmentalize your working life with your personal life because one affects the other. You know, it goes both ways. And it's by getting to know each other, getting those connections that you actually value the other people and they feel valued.
And I think we should change our definition of being friends with people that you work with. So somebody who you manage, I absolutely understand that statement, but that doesn't mean that you don't get to know them beyond just giving them an assignment and them completing it.
Yeah.
You should know who works beside you every single day. You should want to know that. What affects them? What makes them tick? That information is what helps you be able to collaborate better together.
If you would, talk a little bit more about how to build that relationship. If you're new to a team, you're coming into a new company and you have a supervisor role, doesn't matter what department, say you have six people that are going to report to you. How would you advise approaching those people and developing that rapport of getting to know who they are?
So I would definitely advise a one-on-one introductory meeting with each person separately. I would also advise an introductory team meeting with all six people so that there is building blocks of our individual relationship, but also our relationship as a team. And I think you continue to build on those building blocks by setting up one-on-one and team meetings at some sort of an interval. So the regularity of our opportunities to continue to have conversations with one another on a regular basis is very important at whatever cadence works for the company and the individuals involved. And that introductory conversation is just a getting to know someone else. And again, I've talked about this, but I'll say it again. You center the conversation on the other person. When you go into a conversation and you are selfish and it is all about you, It's not going to be a productive conversation, or it's not going to be one in which there's the collaboration that's needed. So it's really important to center the conversation on the other person. I would also say, how do you serve them? How can I help you be a more effective, efficient, successful employee? What can I give you that will help you do that? And kind of having that conversation on a regular basis too.
Getting to know your team and at the same time, letting them know who you are and what you're about. But the true leadership is not about you. It's not about me. It's about other people.
It is. I agree with that 100%.
My thanks to Angela Shaw. If you'd like to learn more about Angela, go to the show notes. And if you have a question or comment, go to unlabelleadership.com, click the message icon, and leave a voicemail message up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who contribute to the show, because this is a volunteer service. Mostly, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, lead on!